I have the ability to take sex places it's never gone before. Two things motivate me to keep going. The first is we hear from our community every day how much we've changed their lives. And the second thing is a dynamic that I characterize as I'm going to fucking well show you. You tell me it can't be done, I'm going to fucking well show you. You put a barrier in my path, I'm going to fucking well show you. I take all of that daily demoralization and discouragement, and I turn it into inspiration and motivation.
Welcome to the Growth Mixtape Podcast, and I'm your host, Bob Mathers. If you're in the autumn of your life and wondering how to make the most of the time you've got left, you're in the right place. Every episode, I talk to ordinary people doing extraordinary things. We hear their stories and how they've overcome the same shitty fears we all face to live a bigger life. And if they can do it, so can we. Today, we talk to Cindy Gallup, a big wheeling ad exec from Manhattan that's worked with the world's largest brands. Business Insider named her one of the 15 most important marketing strategists alongside Malcolm Gladwell and Seth Godin, and number one on their list of top 30 people in advertising. She's basically Don Draper from Mad Men. Cindy is known for blowing shit up, and her latest target, sex. As an older woman who loves dating younger men, she was tired of teaching men that had grown up watching porn how real sex works. She launched Make Love Not Porn as a safe place where you can go to see real people having real sex in all its silly, messy, beautiful humanness. I've done my research, and yes, it's sweaty, saggy, awkward, and feels, well, pretty doable. But it hasn't been easy. She talks about the structural, cultural, and financial obstacles she's had to overcome and how she's used people's skepticism to fuel her mantra, "I'll fucking well show you." I was also dying to talk to Cindy about her life before Make Love Not Porn, because the things she's done are exactly the things I struggle with every day. Cindy talks to us about our personal brand and how to control what people are saying about us when we're not in the room. She talks about the cure for ageism and how we can build the confidence we need to do and say whatever we want without worrying what anyone thinks. Maybe you're struggling to figure out your superpower. Maybe you're concerned about your kids having a healthier relationship with sex. Or maybe you're just tired of men asking if they can come on your face. Whatever it is, this episode is for you. Please enjoy Cindy Gallup. Welcome, Cindy, to the show. This is amazing to have you here.
I'm delighted to be here, Bob.
So just a bit of context for this conversation, Cindy. The story around Make Love Not Porn is what initially led me to reaching out. I was just so curious. There was so much about it that was intriguing to me. And then, so of course, in preparation for this interview, I start digging into what you actually do as your other day job. And I find out you do speaking and coaching on things like reinvention, personal branding, knowing your worth. And I'm like, oh my God, this is the kind of thing I struggle with every day. It's actually why I created the podcast. It's what my audience is dying to hear about. So I guess in short, I'm like, I kind of have 3 hours of questions before we even get to Make Love Not Porn. So this is going to be an exercise in discipline for me, because I've just got so much to ask you.
Terrific. And ask away.
So you call yourself the Michael Bay of business. And there's so much about that that I love. It's emotional. It's visual. I think everybody would love a clear tagline like that. How did you come up with it?
So I came up with it very spontaneously, Bob. So many years ago, I was meeting with some potential consultancy clients, because I also support myself by consulting on the side. And I was explaining my approach to consulting. So I said to them, I consult very selectively, only for clients and brands who want to change the game in their particular sector. So you come to me for radical, innovative, groundbreaking, transformative. I don't do status quo. And then lightheartedly, off the cuff, I went, I like to blow shit up. I'm the Michael Bay business. And everyone laughed. And I left the room and I thought, actually, that is a really good way to sum up what I do. And I've been using that line ever since. But the key thing, Bob, is, you know, I use that line not as a bit of whimsy, a bit of creativity, a bit of fun. I use it entirely deliberately, because when I characterize what I do in that way, it attracts to me the people who want what I do. It repels the ones who don't. And I want to repel the ones who don't because they're a waste of time, effort, and money.
That's amazing. And so you kind of stumbled into that perfect tagline. But I'm also curious, how do you summon creativity when you need it? Because it's something that I struggle with. It seems to hit me kind of like what you described. I really need to find a way of controlling it because I can't always find it when I need it.
Well, you know, I think we're all inherently creative and we just have to let ourselves be creative. In my case, Bob, obviously that process is very much helped by the fact that my background is 40 years working in brand building, marketing and advertising. You know, what my industry is very good at is obviously synthesizing complex business strategies down to one highly memorable and compelling soundbite. But everybody is creative and everybody can be creative when you simply free yourself up to honestly say what you think and articulate what you feel without worrying about conforming to anybody else's standards.
Yeah. And the other, well, I love that. And I think the hardest part of coming up with a tagline for that, just before we move on, is figuring out what it is that's unique and special to you that you have to offer the world that nobody else can. And you did a great job. I mean, you had those descriptors already. So the Michael Bay of business just kind of flowed out of you as a natural extension. Like, what advice do you have when you're talking to people trying to build personal brands to get to that essence so that they can create a really cool, memorable tagline like that?
So when you say what you've just said, Bob, create a cool, memorable tagline, everyone goes, "Whoa!" You know, oh my God, how do I do that? So I encourage people to think about it in a different context, because what you are coming up with is what I call your default throwaway descriptor. Now, every single one of us has a personal default throwaway descriptor, whether we realize it or not. Your default throwaway descriptor is what happens when somewhere in the world, you know, at a conference, you know, at a cocktail party, two people meet and one of these people knows you and the other one doesn't. Okay. So they're chatting and your name comes up in the conversation. The person knows you goes, blah, 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 Bob. And the other person goes, who's Bob? And the first person goes, oh, you know Bob, he, bleh. Your default throwaway descriptor is how somebody sums you up very quickly when you are not in the room. We all have one. And as you would imagine, it behoves us, therefore, to make sure it is what we would like it to be. Especially because your default throw descriptor is really important in a business context. And this is something I say to, you know, business brands as well. You know, you need to think about what your business brand default throw descriptor is, because you want your potential clients to go, oh, we must get so-and-so because they were. Think about it in that way. How would you like to be summed up very quickly when you are not there?
Yeah. And if you don't own that, then who knows what people are saying when you're not in the room?
Oh yeah. People are going to default
right
to something that may not be like it to be.
Yeah. Well, what I want to circle back to something else you alluded to early, Cindy, and I know you talk about this a lot. One of the things that absolutely drew me to a lot of the things you were saying on your blog and in your videos, you really do seem to be genuinely one of these people that doesn't give a shit what people think. And not in a way that everybody else says they don't care what people think, but really do, like me. You're one of these unicorns that really doesn't seem to care, like you're from outer space. So have you always had that? Where did that come from? And how can I be more like you?
Well, thank you, Bob. I haven't always had that. That was absolutely a product of 65 years of life, you know. But honestly, I'm a big fan of radical simplicity. I like to keep things very simple. And the answer to your question is extremely simple. Take a long, hard look inside yourself and ask yourself, what do I stand for? What do I believe in? What do I value? What am I all about? because identifying your personal beliefs, values, philosophies of life, you know, what you stand for, first of all, that makes life so much easier. Life still throws at you all the shit it always will, but you know exactly how to respond to that shit in any given situation in a way that is true to you. And by the way, that is the secret of happiness, living your life and doing your work in a way that is always true to yourself. But that is precisely what then gives you confidence. Because when you know that you are always living and working your values, you don't have to care what anybody else thinks. Because the most important thing is, again, that you are always being true to what you stand for.
That's beautiful. So beliefs and values, and then from there, yeah, living in alignment with that is really the key to confidence and happiness. One of the other things, so I'm 55, and I talk to a lot of people that are kind of in this season of my life, and I don't know whether it's COVID or what's been happening, but it seems like there's a collective sense of like crisis of purpose. Like I've talked to a lot of people who are like, yeah, I just feel like I've been having a career that was kind of laid out for me. And I'm looking down the barrel of the last 10 years of it. And I just feel like I can't do this anymore. I want to do something different. Did you ever have this in that, you know, in that 65 year span you talked about? And what do you tell people when they ask for advice around that?
I mean, first of all, you know, Bob, my entire life and career has quite honestly been a series of accidents. You know, I have never consciously, intentionally planned anything. And I subscribe to a wonderful mantra that I heard from my old boss in the advertising world, Sir John Hegarty. John has this great mantra that goes, do interesting things and interesting things will happen to you. And I'm a great believer in living your life that way. So, you know, what one piece of advice I give to people is if you were going to start your own business and, you know, there were zero practical constraints, what would it be? And the reason I say that to people is because when they identify it, I go, great, now go off and start that. And what I mean by that is begin having conversations about starting that business. Because you may not even end up starting that business, but going out and talking about it, meeting people who operate in that world, making connections that could be helpful to expand your thinking, all of that can take you in directions that you never thought of before. You know, at a micro level, as I say, doing interesting things, stepping out of the oiled grooves you've been living your life in, and just opening up to pursuing different things that may not even be what you end up doing. But just the process of doing that is going to put you in the way of other interesting things.
I love that, Cindy. And it's similar to something. I think maybe what I hear you're saying is curiosity is a big part of that. Just being curious and not getting paralyzed by what most of us do is sitting around and thinking about, oh, that could never happen. And geez, that's going to take forever. It's just like, well, could you have a couple of conversations about that and be open to the possibility? It even goes back to your idea of creativity. Like, don't lock yourself into a process. Just start the conversation, follow your curiosity, and be open to whatever, wherever it takes you. I love that. Okay. One last thing before we leave this kind of age thing, or maybe we'll never leave it. That's okay too. You know, I do find, honestly, that I sometimes think like, the first 30 years of my career was preparing me for this. And I don't know what the next thing is yet, but I do feel really excited about that next phase. But when I say that to people, I think they're probably just thinking, yeah, you're just kind of like rationalizing getting older. Like you're having some sort of midlife crisis. And so I wonder, like, what's your take on ageism? Because I do feel more creative, more valuable, more energized than I ever have. I just don't know really how to articulate it or what direction to point it in yet.
Well, you know, I've been combating ageism for a very long time. And I coined the hashtag say your age because I tell everyone how old I am as often as possible. I'm 65. I shout it from the rooftops. And that's because I believe the complete opposite of the way people normally respond, they think positively ageism, which is to say, oh, you know, age is just a number. It's not. Your age is a very special number because your age is the sum total of you. Your age is the sum total of all of your lived experiences to date, all of your expertise, everything you've learned along the way. You know, your age is what makes you valuable. And so absolutely say your age as often as possible. Because also, by going loud and proud with your age, you encourage everybody else to do so as well. And you start eradicating ageism. I remember, you know, some years back, a woman messaged me on LinkedIn to say that she had been at a conference on a panel where the panelists had each been asked to introduce themselves. And so bearing in mind, you know, my injunction to say your age, she said, hi, you know, I'm so-and-so. I am, whatever she was at the time, 55. And she said, you could literally hear the audience do a sharp intake of breath. You know, and then every other person on the panel introduced themselves with their ages as well. You know, and that's how you absolutely can, by this one very simple everyday thing that anyone can do, start helping eradicate ageism. And you know, it's important to you, Bob, because ageism operates at every single point of the age spectrum. You can be dismissed for being too young, especially if you're female, as much as you can be dismissed as being too old, again, especially if you're female. And so, you know, young people need to see older people absolutely refuting what young people have been told, which is that after 30, it's all over. I mean, for crying out loud, you know. And in fact, Bob, I had this really brought home to me when 3 years ago, my friends Elisa and Lily, the mother and daughter team behind a brand called Style Like You, asked me to participate in a video interview series that they do called What's Underneath. And the construct of this series is that the interviewee sits on a stool in front of a camera, Elisa and Lily sit behind the camera, they ask questions, and as the interviewee answers each question, they remove an item of clothing. The idea being that you literally and metaphorically strip down to what's underneath. So at the age of 62, I sat on a stool in front of the camera, I took all my clothes off down to my underwear, and I talked about, you know, how I like to live my life and make my porn and everything. And I was blown away by the response to this interview. I went viral on TikTok. I mean, I wasn't even on TikTok at the time. clips from this interview have millions of views, thousands of comments on TikTok. There are 900 stitches of me in this interview on TikTok, many of them with a Gen Z meme, I have seen my future and it is bright. and the comments, you know, on TikTok, on Instagram, YouTube, so many young people, young women, but also young men, saying this is the older female role model I've been looking for all my life. And in fact, I was especially moved by, there was one comment on under the video on Instagram where a woman said, imagine if we had grown up seeing and hearing women live and talk like this, imagine how very different our lives would be now. And so it's all of our responsibility to role model the fact that, as I firmly believe, the older you get, the better life gets.
What a beautiful example of just trying something different. I mean, obviously, there was no way for you to know the impact that this conversation would have, and stripping down at 62 to your underwear and going on TikTok, especially since you weren't even on it, and the impact that that had. It's amazing how those things can ripple through. And all it took was some courage, maybe not giving a shit what people thought, and seeing what happened.
And you would not believe, Bob, you know, the number of younger men who slid into my DMs.
Yeah, I can imagine that. I can see that. Hey, it's Bob, and I'm taking the Growth Mixtape on the road in a series of keynote speeches inspired by the stories of my amazing guests. At their core, these signature talks are about how to get you and your teams off autopilot and stop settling for small incremental improvements. This isn't going to come from spewing business advice. My podcast is full of people that have done incredible things, and every one of them struggles with self-doubt, imposter syndrome, and the crippling fear of judgment that holds so many of us back. They've also found ways through it by rediscovering their creativity, their curiosity, and the confidence to do scary things. Imagine the power of bringing these vulnerable stories to life, live and on stage, to help you and your teams hit your targets, find your voice, and be the rock stars you are. Book me for your next event at bobmathers.ca. Now back to the show. So you talked about Make Love Not Porn, and I'd like to talk a bit about that. First of all, where did this idea come from?
Well, you know, like everything in my life and career, Bob, as I said earlier, it was a complete and total accident. So I did not set out to do anything that I very bizarrely find myself doing now. I date younger men, and 17, 18 years ago, long before anybody else realized this, I began realizing through my direct personal experience dating younger men that when we don't talk openly and honestly about sex, porn becomes sex education by default in not a good way. I'm a naturally action-oriented person. I went, right, going to do something about this. So 16 years ago, purely as a little side venture at the time, I put up on no money a tiny clunky website at makelovenotporn.com that in its original form was kind of a public service announcement. Porn world versus real world. Here's what happens in the porn world. Here's what really happens in the real world. I launched at the TED conference in 2009, became the only TED speaker to utter the words, come on my face, on the TED stage several times. The talk went viral as a result, and it drove this extraordinary global response to my tiny website that I had never anticipated. Thousands of people wrote to me from all around the world, pouring their hearts out, and I realized I'd uncovered a huge global social issue. And so I then felt I had a personal responsibility. I had to take Make Love Not Porn forwards in a way that would make it much more far-reaching, helpful, and effective. And so I turned into a business designed to do good and make money simultaneously, which is what I would like to see all businesses do ultimately. And so I turned it into what Make Love Not Porn is today, which is the world's first and only user-generated, importantly, 100% human-curated social sex video sharing platform. So we're kind of what Facebook would be if it allowed you to openly, healthily, socially, sexually self-express, which it clearly doesn't. The way to think about us is, if porn is the Hollywood blockbuster movie, Make Love Not Porn is the badly needed documentary. We are a unique window onto the funny, messy, loving, wonderful sex we all have in the real world. And what we're doing is we are socializing, normalizing, destigmatizing sex, bringing it out of the shadows into the sunlight to promote consent, communication, good sexual values and behavior. We are literally sex education through real world demonstration.
Okay, so I have 1,000 questions, and I checked out the site, and a few things struck me, of course. One is that this is very different than any porn I've ever seen. And so I was reflecting, it's like, yeah, I guess I never thought of it, but I've had sex, I've watched porn, I've never watched other people have real sex. I guess I hadn't thought of it before. One of the things, though, too, and being the father of two boys, it has made me realize that I probably have outsourced unknowingly more of sex education to Pornhub than I really want to admit. And yeah, and so I imagine this is, it's welcome, but it's also making people confront sort of their sense of identity, because like there's nothing more important to me than being a good dad. But I'm like, shit, I don't think I've done nearly as good a job as I should have. And I'm sure you're hearing that, and you're forcing some uncomfortable conversations.
No. So I'm delighted to say, Bob, first of all, that Make Love Not Porn has been helping on that front for many years, and we're about to help parents even more. So first of all, you know, as a unique business, we have a unique capability. We have the power to change people's sexual attitudes and behavior for the better in a way that nothing else can. And so we've taught countless young people that porn is not sex in the real world. For years, parents have been buying their teenage children's subscriptions to Make Love Not Porn because they tell us, and I quote a mother, "I want my kids to see what happy, healthy, loving sexual relationships actually look like." And I can tell you that in the past year, those messages and parents become more numerous and more desperate. So a mother wrote to us a few months ago and said, "I've just discovered my 12-year-old son is watching Pornhub. I would much rather he watched Make Love Not Porn. I know he's underage. Can we find a workaround?" Now, at Make Love Not Porn, we are more legal than legal. You know, we are fully age-gated. We are for 18 and over. But our policy is that parental judgment trumps that. As a parent, you know what is right for your child. As a parent, you can absolutely, you know, join Make Love Not Porn. You are then free to gift a subscription to, you know, anybody you want. So that mother has now gifted a subscription to a 12-year-old son. And by the way, it's just one example of many messages like that, including the mother who wrote to us and said, you know, "I have three teenage sons. I want to give them all subscriptions. Do you have a family plan?" And Bob, my team and I went, "That's a great idea." So now we're trying to figure out how we can do a family plan. So I've faced huge challenges, not even growing Make Love Not Porn, just keeping it alive. Basically, because every piece of business infrastructure other tech startups take for granted, we can't. The small print always says no adult content. And it's all pervasive. I can't get funded. I can't get banked. You know, we were debanked 3 times in 2 months earlier this year. Fortunately, we now have found a bank that welcomes us. But everything is a huge obstruction to, you know, honestly, a business whose mission is to help end rape culture globally. You know, which is ridiculous. And I'm happy to tell you that we finally managed to raise a small amount of equity crowdfunding last year with a crowdfunding campaign and WeFunder. We have been raising bridge funding on a safe note. And we will, in a couple months' time, be launching makelovenotporn.academy. And makelovenotporn.academy is what I characterize as the Khan Academy of sex education. So we are building Make Love Not Porn Academy on the same principles as Make Love Not Porn, user-generated, crowdsourced, 100% curated, revenue share. Because I'm not about reinventing the wheel. This is an aggregation play. We are building the go-to global hub for the best of the world's sex education content. It's already out there, but it's being blocked, censored, and deplatformed everywhere. And so our mission at Make Love Not Porn Academy is to organize the world's sex education information to make it universally accessible and useful. You can search the best of the world's sex ed by age appropriateness. So if you're a parent freaking out going, "Oh my God, my 6-year-old asked about this, what do I say?" We're going to give you the tools and content to be able to have that conversation with a 6-year-old. We will only serve him age appropriate sex education content.
Wow, that's so powerful. I wonder, you know, it just makes me remember back. I don't know what personal experiences you have from early on in sex education. My friends and I, we had a Playboy magazine that we would bury in the woods, and we would get on our bikes and pedal up to the forest and leaf through it together. And like, what an image of sort of shame, right? Like there was the only way for us to see boobs back in the day was to go up and watch a Playboy and dig it up from the moldy leaves. But I compare that to what kids have access to now, like every possible version of sex, hardcore, softcore, anything at their fingertips for free. It's so hard for me as a middle-aged man to even appreciate what that would do to my understanding of relationships and sex. Like, it's one of those things that I really have a hard time getting my head around.
There's a reason our name is Make Love Not Porn, because we do everything through the lens of love. Make Love Porn Academy will be education through love. And I say that because, you know, what we now have is, you know, a generation of children, young people, messaging and communicating through screens so much that IRL social interactions are awkward and insecurity inducing. They are forming relationships with AI chatbots, which are completely friction-free because a chatbot just tells you exactly what you want to hear. And what is getting missed in all of this is the wonder, the joy, the friction, the humanness, the connection, and when you're ready, the manifestation, sexual expression of first love. And so I've been saying to parents for years, you must talk to your children about sex as early as possible. But I've also said you must also talk to them about love. Love is such a foundational construct in our society. We leave it to popular culture to define it. And we absolutely shouldn't do that when it's such an important formative influence in growing up. There are two very simple pieces of advice that I give every parent. The first is, today, you cannot begin talking to your child about sex too early. And when I say that, I don't mean literally talk about sex. What I mean is, the very first time your child asks where babies come from, you know, plays with their genitals, the most important thing isn't even what you say as much as how you say it. Never, ever get visibly flustered or embarrassed. You know, never, you know, shut them up, you know, change the topic, leave the room. Instead, answer them calmly, straightforwardly, honestly, because by doing so, you open up a channel of communication for the two of you around this topic that will be there for them for the rest of their lives. Then the second thing I say to parents is, when you talk to your child about sex, no matter how early, you must also at the same time talk to your child about porn. And that's much easier to do than most parents think. So you go, so darling, we've just talked about sex. And you know how together we watch movies and videos and cartoons where things happen that aren't real. Well, there are also movies and videos about sex, and they're not real either. And because of that, they can be quite confusing. So we'd rather you don't watch until you're older. But if anyone ever shows you anything like that, or you stumble across it, come and talk to us, come and talk to me, I can explain it. That's all you have to say. You can end the conversation right there, because just by saying that, you've done two very important things. The first is, you've set up in their minds, when they stumble across porn, as they will, it's not real. And the second thing you've said is, come and talk to me about it. And you'll want to do that, because what they stumble across can be utterly traumatizing.
You're killing me, Cindy, because what you just described isn't anything like how I handled those early conversations. Where were you 10 years ago? One of the things you mentioned earlier, I'm really curious about, you mentioned that it's 100% human curated. And I know you've got Make Love Not Porn stars. So how does the content get generated? And you have people sitting and watching it, and how do you gauge what's healthy or what's not? It's some kind of subjective criteria, I'm guessing.
I'd like to just contextualize my response in the broader tech landscape as a whole, because the young white male founders of the giant tech platforms that dominate all our lives today, they are not the primary targets, online or offline, of harassment, abuse, sexual assault, racism, violence, rape, intimate abuse. Therefore, they did not and they do not proactively design for the prevention of any of those things on their platforms. And we see the results of that around us every day. We design safe spaces and safe experiences, but we don't get funded. Only 1.7% of all venture capital last year went to female founders. And that is why we have still not seen how much safer, better, happier, and by the way, way more lucrative the future of the internet will be when it's designed and built through the female lens, and these are the two keywords, at scale. I designed Make Love Not Porn through the female lens to be the safest place on the internet. Our curators watch every frame of every video from beginning to end before we approve or reject and we publish it. And by the way, our curation criteria are very broad. Your video must be legal, consensual, and real. Beyond that, anything goes. We exist to celebrate the full glorious spectrum of human sexuality in the real world. We review every comment on every video before we approve or reject and we publish it. No one else does any of this, by the way. We can vouch for every single piece of content on our platform. you will find no trolls, no hate, no abuse. You'll find nothing but love on Make Love Not Porn. And the key point about that, Bob, is we are tiny, bootstrapping, have no money, and we've human curated everything for 12 years. Imagine what Facebook, Instagram, TikTok could do with their billions if they chose to. Safety on the internet is not a matter of viability. It's a matter of will.
Yeah, that's amazing. And you, so are there people making money from this? Like you have people recording and they share in the revenue?
So our members pay to subscribe, rent and stream social sex videos. Half that revenue goes to our contributors, whom we call our Make Love Not Porn stars.
When you started this, you knew that you were doing something unconventional. Has it been harder than you thought?
Oh my God, infinitely. You know, I honestly had no idea of the business, tech and financial barriers that I would come up against. In fact, 16 years ago when I was discovering those, somebody said to me, Cindy, to do what you want to do, you're going to have to start your own bank. And I was so angry at what I was encountering. I went, right, I'm going to start my own bank. And I literally 16 years ago investigated starting my own bank, which is when I discovered, you know, regulation makes that impossible. But I am extremely fired up about the barriers that the business, tech and financial world have put in my way. Our social sex videos role model good sexual values and good sexual behavior. And here's the important part. We make all of that aspirational versus what you see in porn and popular culture. One man left a comment saying, this video makes me want to be a better man in the bedroom and in life. We can do that. And so it is appalling that we face as many barriers as we do.
Yeah, you've received some really powerful feedback, whether it's from parents, women, men. How has that surprised you?
Well, I think, you know, the most surprising thing has been I designed to make Love and Porn be fully diverse and inclusive, and we are. But in the 12 years we've operated, we've discovered that Make Love Not Porn is especially a revelation to men. More men, young and old, send us grateful emails, leave appreciative comments than anybody else. You would not believe the number of men who write to us regularly and say, I just watched my first video on Make Love Not Porn and afterwards I cried. I've said for years, I wish society understood that the opposite of what it thinks is true. Women enjoy sex just as much as men, and men are just as romantic as women. Yet neither gender is allowed to openly celebrate either fact. We would all be so much better off if they were. We are one of the solutions to toxic masculinity. We are the antithesis of Andrew Tate. We are transforming the lives of boys and men through the power of love, intimacy, and human connection.
God, there's so much I love about that, Cindy. Given the obstacles that you've faced, did you ever consider walking away?
Oh, many times. You bloody bet. But, you know, fortunately, Bob, two things motivate me to keep going. The first is we hear from our community every day how much we've changed their lives. You know, if I thought I'd started a business with no product market fit that nobody wanted, I would have walked away long ago. I absolutely have not. I've started a business that the world is crying out for, that has not even begun to see its full impact at global scale as it can. We are funded to be able to do that. And the second thing is, fortunately, the thing that most motivates me is a dynamic that I characterize as, I'm going to fucking well show you. You tell me it can't be done, I'm going to fucking well show you. You put a barrier in my path, I'm going to fucking well show you. I take all of that daily demoralization and discouragement, and I turn it into inspiration and motivation.
In listening to you talk, Cindy, it honestly feels like, and I wonder if you ever feel this way, that your everything you've done in your career up to this point was sort of preparing you for this, and that you are uniquely positioned more than anyone else in the world to take on this massive challenge. Does that ever occur to you?
I think you're absolutely right, Bob. You know, I like to say that I have the best possible experience for doing what I'm doing now, because I've spent 40 years working in advertising. That's 40 years working in the business of getting people to do things they originally had no intention of doing. So yes, I have the ability to take sex places it's never gone before. You know, we're spearheading at Make Love Not Porn what I call the social sex revolution. The revolutionary part is not the sex. It's the fact we're finally making it social, bringing it out of the shadows into the sunlight. And also, I'll be perfectly frank, because this is absolutely my pitch to investors, I'm uniquely positioned, therefore, to make an absolute goddamn fucking shit ton of money doing that. The first is, oh my God, the money we made out of sex. We all have it. We all enjoy it. Recession proof. Market never goes away. But the second area is, oh my God, the money to be made out of socially acceptable sex. When you do what we're doing, you normalize people feeling really okay about publicly buying, you know, goods, products, services, about publicly doing what they do with everything else, reviewing, sharing, recommending, advocating, and publicly turning themselves into brand ambassadors. That's the trillion-dollar financial future I'm going after.
You know, I started off this conversation, Cindy, with 1,000 questions. We've probably answered maybe a fraction of them. It's just, there's so much about this conversation that is going to stick with me that I'm going to reflect on. I couldn't be more grateful. One question, what are you most excited about now?
I think, you know, what I'm most excited about, Bob, is that I do feel that I am finally finding investors who get it. Mm. And I say that because the only thing holding me back from realizing the vision I've talked to you analysts about is lack of access to funding. And by the way, not just investors, but also we now have the ability to take philanthropic capital because we've partnered with an amazing nonprofit called Inspire Access. So I'm feeling very optimistic and very hopeful that in 2025, I will be able to access the capital I need, you know, the lack of which is the only thing holding me back.
Yeah, I'm hopeful for you. So one last question, I guess, Cindy. If you had a giant billboard, I stole this question from Tim Ferriss. If you had a giant billboard with your brilliant marketing mind that millions of people could see and you could put anything on it, a picture, a meme, or a saying, what would it be?
Oh, it would obviously say in huge letters, make love, not porn, and then .com. And by the way, Bob, it's very funny you asked that question because, I pitched Make Love, Not Porn for 2 years, 2009, 2011. That's how long it took me to find one angel investor who got it. But, you know, some years back, he said to me, Cindy, I have one request. He said, you know how when you take a taxi from JFK into Manhattan, there's that moment when you come over the brow of a hill and you see the entire, you know, Manhattan, you know, skyline laid out in front of you. He said, I want us to buy a giant billboard at exactly that point and put Make Love Not Porn on it in bright pink neon letters so we become part of the New York skyline. And by the way, this is why I love my investor. So I went, you got it. So I then tried to make that happen. And the reason I couldn't was because Upfront Media, they operate all of the billboards in New York City on behalf of the MTA who own the billboards. They basically refused to allow us to put Make Love Not Porn on the billboard. I went, okay, let's try this a different way. I bought the URL socialsexrevolution.com, put up a homepage there that was simply our manifesto, went back with socialsexrevolution.com instead. They went, nope, doesn't matter. You can put whatever you want. We're not letting you because you are Make Love Not Porn. And by the way, I was so angry. This is like 7 years ago. I went, okay, if I'm not allowed to be part of the landscape of New York, I'm going to impose myself on the landscape of New York. And we took the money meant for the billboard and we spent it on a guerrilla marketing exercise over Pride weekend where we went out and we projected Make Love Not Porn ads, entirely safe work, by the way, all over buildings across New York City. But that is why, in answer to your question, I would absolutely have a giant billboard that said, makelovenotporn.com.
That's amazing. You know, as you were telling that story, I was thinking, she's going to tell me that she bought a bunch of Manhattan real estate and painted Make Love Not Porn on the side of a building, which is essentially what you did.
I wish I could permanently. Yeah.
Needless to say, so other than makelovenotporn.com, where can people go if they've liked what they heard and they want to learn more?
Terrific. So do follow me and Make Love Not Porn on Instagram, on X. We're at Cindy Gallup, at Make Love Not Porn. Follow me on LinkedIn as well. We are on Facebook, MLNPTV. I'm on Facebook as well. I have a Substack called Dear Cindy, where I answer a question a week. You can write in with anything about business, sex, love, whatever it may be, and I answer it. So do subscribe to Dear Cindy on Substack. And, you know, obviously, please do go to makelovenotporn.com, support us by signing up, subscribing. Do consider becoming a Make Love Not Porn star. You know, it's transformative for the people who do that. And, you know, if there are any open-minded, forward-thinking investors out there, hit me up at cindy@makelovenotporn.com.
This has been amazing, Cindy. One of my all-time favorite conversations. I cannot thank you enough.
It's been an absolute pleasure, Bob.